chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make heaven in the middle of it. Rest make heaven in the middle. We are rest make heaven.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Along with me this evening is Tony Gosling from Bristol, England. Welcome back, Tony. You're always welcome.
Hi, George. Hi, George. Well, it's a bit of a miracle we've been able to speak to each other tonight.
I know.
We've had a bit of problem with good old Bill Gates' Skype, which doesn't really seem to work for us.
Boy, I tell you, ever since Microsoft took over Skype, it had never worked properly as far as I'm concerned. You know, I've always had trouble.
Just some news for you. It happened a while ago, a few months ago, but just for your listeners, Russia Today is now completely stopped using Skype. They found it so problematic, unreliable, etc., that they've now decided that they're not using it at all. Russia Today, of course, is probably the Russian equivalent of something like CNN in America or PBS or NBC, whatever, and BBC here in Britain or Channel 4, whatever. It's a major national broadcast. In fact, it's state funded, so. It's very likely, I think, looking at what's been going on, that RT America will be cut off, shut down, etc. In who knows how long, but that certainly is now on the cards. I think rather than waiting for it to happen, we should just be aware that the Russian state broadcaster will probably be banned in the United States. Now, look, one of the things to remember about these kinds of bannings. Britain, a few years ago, banned Press TV, which is the Iranian broadcaster, is that in the Second World War, the British never banned any of the German broadcasts. They never tried to jam them. They decided that the most important thing was to allow the people to listen to this stuff, but to actually beat them on the narrative, beat them on the common sense of what they were saying, the honesty, and to know that the people would see it as propaganda, register it as propaganda, and I suppose despise it. But this time, that's not been happening. In fact, the opposite's been happening. The same sort of tactics used by Nazi Germany are now being used by the governments in the West in order to try and censor the broadcasts from other countries, George.
Well, that's interesting, because then it became a debate then in the West. Narrative could win the field of battle, you know?
Well, that's right. I think now we're now living in an age where psychological warfare is getting more and more. I mean, looking at the clampdowns that have been going on over the last few months, literally this week, there's a colleague of mine, John White, who has been posting about Las Vegas. Facebook has now banned him until the 10th of October. He's basically a very sensible guy. He doesn't swear, this sort of thing. And he's very, very hot on verification and factual stuff. So he's a decent, honest person. He's very, he's been banned today from Facebook. So his group's been shut down, etc.
Right.
We're also looking at increased bannings by Google. So obviously they've demonetized most of the sharpest journalists now, trying to cut them off from having a living, and, succeeding in stopping them having a living, a lot of them. And so that's Google, YouTube. Google have also introduced their Hitler's birthday algorithm, which was in April, and that algorithm has cut out a large part of the search for some of the best investigative journalists. Some of their pages on investigative journalists' pages, on websites, like Michael Tyler, who's done all the investigations into the deaths of bankers, have been completely wiped out. So what we're seeing, really, quietly is a big clampdown by the tech giants. They call them the tech giants, but they're almost all really wedded in with the US war machine. So, you know, via the NSA, a lot of the money comes from the NSA, and so they're seen as a way of manipulating public opinion. Their income stream is much more from the advertisers and from the military than it is from the users, because, of course, for most users, these are free to use. So they're obviously looking at where the money's coming from and saying, we're going to do what the people who are paying us want, which is we're talking about people mainly like Facebook is number one, who I think is probably completely accessible to people like the Israeli intelligence, certainly British and American intelligence too, almost certainly, and completely transparent. They can just read in real time everything that's going on there, even if it's attempted to be private, like private messages. And so the big tech giants like Google, YouTube, Microsoft, and Facebook, I think they're basically being weaponized. Now the idea is to get rid of any content which doesn't agree with the official pro-war point of view, and to keep every very, very close tabs on everyone that uses it. And that's a very good reason to migrate away. Lots of different places you can go. One of them is VK.com, which is a sort of alternative to Facebook. It looks quite similar to Facebook, but it's not got functionality, unfortunately, quite as much as Facebook has. But we really need to be shifting, I think, off of these platforms wherever possible, George.
Yeah, I'm going to look for something other than Skype here real quick, because this is not satisfactory, what's going on with Skype. Well, what do you think about the Vegas shooting? What have you collected some thoughts there?
Yeah, well, certainly have. I mean, when it first happened on Sunday evening, I was looking at it on Monday. It didn't look right. Immediately, we're hearing. The official story is that Stephen Paddock was a lone gunman. That he, although he was actually having a very nice life with his girlfriend and with his lots of money and also being able to get around the world whenever he wanted to, gambling, Las Vegas, his story was that he was someone who made his money from gambling. Well, I mean, that's not entirely true. He was, I think, invested in real estate, things like that, and he was making money like that. But this does fit potentially the profile of an agent. So, you know, someone who says to his friends, oh, I just, you know, I've got loads of money, but I make most of my money because I'm a lucky gambler, this kind of thing. It's the sort of thing that you might expect as a kind of cover story. And also, of course, this will attract people to him. If he's got lots of money, he may well be able to then sort of persuade people to be his friend, influence people. So he may be an agent of influence of some sort in Las Vegas. I just think also, in Las Vegas itself, George, we've got to remember this place was set up in the early part of the last century by the Jewish Mafia. Talking about Meyer Lansky and others, basically set the strip up, originally set it up. So this is a Mafia city. I think it's probably fair to say, of all cities in the US, this is probably one of the most Mafia-up cities in the country. Now, well, also looking at the police department, in Las Vegas must actually be used to dealing with the Mafia. I think, I don't know if you agree with me, George.
Well, they've gone, those are the roots, but they've gone corporate, see what I mean? And they bring in very clean individuals as their front people, see what I mean? That's basically the morphing of the old Mafia and the Flamingo and all that. They've gone to sort of a corporate enterprise, but based upon that Mafia money. But the partner out there is the Mormon Church. The Mormons and the old mob people, the basis of the power group, are those two groups out in Vegas.
Okay, well, the Mormons are Freemasons. The top Mormons are all Freemasons.
Yes.
And so this, again, is something that fits in very nicely with the Mafia.
Yes.
The secret signs, the secret words.
That's part of the whole deal. Right on top of it. Yeah. You're right. You're right.
So, yeah, the Mormon Church is a cult. It's, you know, it's got on the outside of it, Freemasonry, the outside of it, Christianity. Lots and lots of nice smiles, you know, the Osmonds and all that. But on the inside, it's a cult. And it's run in order to control the faith. You know, this is exactly just like the Jesuits in the Catholic Church. You know, the way the Vatican is controlling the Catholic Church, trying to anyway, around the world, is that, you start off with a nice idea, like, you know, the Bible, etc., the thoughts and ideas that are in there, but you capture it, and you run it, and you control it with the use of a cult. So this is what we've been set up with. This guy is, has actually got everything to live for, which that's the first thing that struck me, is this doesn't sound like the sort of guy that would want to sort of blow all these people away. And I started looking into it, digging into it. And, of course, since that time, we've had his brother interviewed, we've had his girlfriend interviewed, all saying that they can't quite believe that he could do such a thing, that he was totally out of character, et cetera, et cetera. So number one thing does not fit. Is this guy going to do it? You know, really, the answer is no. And his neighbour went even further, his next-door neighbour, who's ex-Marine Corps, he's saying that he's a patsy. You know, there's definitely no way that he would do something like this. So here's someone who's from the ex-military themselves, is prepared to sit their neck out a bit, like you might do on the battlefield, and say, look, you know, I'm having none of this. His background is an accountant in Lockheed Martin. He may well have had all sorts of interesting secrets about Lockheed Martin. Could even be that he was starting to spill the beans and brag about that a little bit, which would have very much upset the military-industrial complex if he was doing that. But then, we start to look at the means, motive, and opportunity for the shooting, George. Now, I mean, I'm going to run through a few things. I hope you can fill in with other things you picked up that I miss out. But,
yeah.
I mean, look at it. Has he got the means to do this? Is he able to get all these guns into this room? He's kind of an old guy. He doesn't really look like the sort of bloke that would even need to do this. Certainly the people in the rooms have found... They've seen no guns, no appearance of any guns in there. So maybe they were just transferred from nearby rooms into there by people who were staying in other rooms. There definitely doesn't seem to be any motive. They're still saying that. And I think it's Sheriff Lombardo, isn't it, that's been doing these press conferences from Las Vegas?
Yes, that's right.
Lombardo, he's come across as quite a character, actually. He looks to me as if he's the sort of guy that really wants to find out what's going on here. But he also looks to me as if the kind of guy that's being lent on. Like, he would like to say more, but I don't know if he can.
Yeah, there was an FBI guy.
Yesterday. Yeah. A very interesting piece, George,
yeah.
Which was where he was saying that he felt that the guy had assistance, and the FBI were trying to counter him. So what we've got here is a very interesting situation where the FBI are briefing against the local police. Now, that really, really is a serious thing for the FBI to be doing from their high and mighty tower, to be looking at the guys on the ground who are having to deal with this, picking up all the evidence, and contradicting them. And that's what the FBI have been doing. Now, this does make me very, very suspicious, as you know, and I've sent you a link to it as well. The FBI have been involved in many, if not most, of the terror plots. They've been doing this thing which is where they're effectively trying to create income for themselves by creating terror plots that they then have to solve. It's a pretty sick system, but I think it's going on right across the West, where the intelligence services are actually creating terror plots. They're infiltrating existing terror groups. They're funding existing terror groups, and they're not only infiltrating them, they're steering them and actually supplying them with explosives, with weapons, with ammunition, and even with ideas to go and do stuff in order to justify their own existence. And I think we've got to be really wary about that with the FBI. And so that's why when the FBI just spoke out 2 days ago to contradict what Sheriff Lombardo has been saying, and of course, Lombardo, Italian name, this is mafia country, like I say. But I think that the sheriff in Las Vegas has been digging out all sorts of information that suggests that there are others involved. Right.
Yes, exactly.
A bit of that.
That's exactly what's going on.
First of all, the thing I came across was a woman called Wendy Miller. Wendy Miller was from Kooroy in Australia. She's over there on holiday. And she was telling her newspapers in the newspaper she spoke to over in Australia that she saw some guy come sprinting through out of the Mandalay Bay Hotel, through her hotel, chased by private security. But the interesting thing was that this guy was also wearing private security gear himself. So there's something going on there which is extremely worrying. So it does suggest that somebody else is involved. So this may be what the sheriff's been picking up on. But then, I only discovered this last night, George, is that one of the local news sources there is now saying that there were items in the room that were not paddocks. So when they came in, they found various bits and pieces which were nothing to do, they could not associate or connect with him at all. For example, a phone charger.
Right, exactly.
There's nothing. There's nothing. He didn't have anything that this could be useful for. And so this is pretty clear that that there's some, but there's been other people in there, or at least one other person in that room. So the other thing is actually the position of the body. I think that was a very suspicious, where you've got him lying down with his arms by his side, his legs straight down. He looks like he's kind of been laid down on his back. That is not the normal position to fall to if you've just killed yourself. Also, the gun is in a very strange position. The gun is like 3 feet or so above his head, but his arms are then down by his sides. So it looks like as he killed himself, his arms went down into a kind of normal position where you, as if someone has just laid you down, someone else has laid you down, or you have just laid down to go to sleep, and then the gun has gone off in the opposite direction. Whilst it looks as if he's shot himself, or someone else has shot him in the head. So there's all sorts of problems with this whole idea of did he do this on his own? I mean, I don't think that's. Well, the other thing also, running through some more, George, is that we've been getting lies from the Mandalay Bay Hotel and from the police. Maybe this is orchestrated by the FBI. It's very difficult to tell, but it seems pretty clear that Paddock's arrival was several days previous to what we were told. It was supposed to have been the Thursday before the Sunday shooting. But it looks like there are room service records for two people. There are restaurant tabs for two people, of which he was one. And also car records.
Laura Loomis dug up some car records coming into the garage, a check-in and all that, and it showed him there earlier, just like you just said.
Yeah, and I think probably the strange thing about this horrific, and it really was a horrifying event, wasn't it? I mean, you've got a compound. Apparently this is the first time that they've done this country music event in this kind of compound. It really did seem almost like a prison compound. The people who are watching not the sort of concert I'd like to go to.
Well, see, they sold tickets, so the fencing was to keep people out that didn't buy a ticket, see? When you bought a ticket, you were allowed
inside. The fencing, yeah. George, was enormous. I mean, yeah. It was great big steel fencing. Almost like you were penning an animal or something. It's gigantic.
Yeah, but I'm saying it was far up.
I mean, you could stand, if you wanted to watch the concert, you could stand on the other side of the fencing, you know?
Yeah.
It's something a bit peculiar about that. It looked like some kind of compound, like a prison compound or something. It wasn't the normal sort of concert that I've ever seen, and apparently it's the first time they've ever done it like that.
Well, you know, when the firing, have you gotten into the machine guns? There were two different ones overriding each other. One was a lower pitch at a lower cadence, then there was a higher pitch one.
I have had a listen. I mean, people hear different things, right?
Yeah.
But I've had a listen through the various videos, the machine gun sound.
Yeah.
And I haven't been able to hear two machine guns. What I have heard is one machine gun and an echo. So in other words, you hear the machine gun start in a very kind of sharp, high-pitched rattle, and just a few seconds later, you can hear it start up in the same pattern, but in a much lower tone. That's like an echo. And then once the machine gun finishes, you then hear another kind of low-pitched thing, and then that cuts out.
Well,
that just could be simply an echo of a very, another building. I've had a listen through, and I haven't actually heard any of that. Which it says conclusively that there were two simultaneous machine guns going off.
Yeah, well, Charlotte, who is an ordnance officer, U.S. Army, South, Tom, and all that, she's able to hear two distinctive machine gun firing at the same time. but they're different. They're right, different
well,
kinds.
She needs to post some.
Yeah, we've had. Yeah, we've had.
And show its origin.
Yeah, we've had.
I'd like to hear that.
Yeah.
She needs to post that film and post a specific origin where she got it from to make sure it's not being played around with, yeah?
Yeah, Alex has had a lot of his people, too, Alex Jones, that are like, yeah, okay, so Alex has had some really, like, SEAL team people listen to it and a plethora of other people. Charlotte is an ardent officer in the U.S. Army, and she had naval experience, and she was on a special operations team also, and she's real careful about her opinions, but she's been on the range and fired a lot of weapons being an ordnance officer, and she's hearing something that's over there are two different machine guns.
It could quite easy of being two people in the same, in the same room firing one out of each window, for example.
There were
other people in that room.
Yeah,
and
it could be.
I think the other thing that's pretty clear is that Stephen Paddock wasn't one of the shooters. He may have even been.
Yeah, I believe that. Yeah, I agree with you on that. Opinion is that he was this mysterious person they're talking about that had a meal with him. And there's maybe paraphernalia left, like a charger and stuff. You remember that UCLA psychologist that always showed up and talked to Sirhan, talked to Jack Rubenstein and all that? This is the kind of person controller. He had a controller there the last few days that controlled him on a Manchurian type of a basis. See what I mean?
What they do is they'll befriend them.
Yeah.
It might even be that if he had any kind of informal links to the FBI, of course, he wouldn't have told anyone about that.
Right.
And it also would have been quite normal for him to be having dealings with someone who's undercover FBI.
Yeah.
And he knew nobody else knew, so he probably would have trusted them, etc. But then there is this very interesting postulation which has come from the Trump camp.
Okay.
And allegedly leaked from the police in Las Vegas with photographs and some text from the police, and those photographs were genuine. That is that there was actually an FBI sting operation going on, in that there were ISIS operatives, whatever that means, in the hotel who were doing some sort of arms deal with Stephen involved. But the whole deal was then compromised. So in other words, that the ISIS people were told that he was working for the FBI, he was spying on them, etc., which would explain the little cameras in the trolley, this kind of thing. And then they then decided that they were going to kill the guy from the FBI and then kill loads of people as well. But one of the most fascinating aspects of this is Rita Katz and AMAC News Agency both claiming it as a genuine ISIS attack. Now, I think anyone that looks at Stephen Paddock can tell it's not an ISIS attack from Stephen Paddock. So there has to be something else going on. Either the information coming out of Rita Katz, the site intelligence site, which all of the Western media rely on as cast iron evidence that ISIS is claiming attacks, as well as the AMAC News Agency, is rubbish. So what we can say from this attack and from them claiming this, that is absolute nonsense, most of what they've been saying. That is, if what we're being told by the FBI, by the authorities, that Stephen Paddock being behind this, or a lone gunman, is true. And I really don't think it is. So potentially what's happened here is there's been some sting operation by the FBI, and what that email says, and I imagine you've seen it too, George, is that the FBI are so embarrassed that they were doing illegal activities on American soil that they don't want the truth to be known. So basically Stephen Paddock is the patsy. He's the guy who takes the blame, takes the rap for criminals within the FBI. And I think that's actually quite a likely scenario. You know, it fits the evidence. And the idea of Paddock himself doing it on his own because he has no profile, no motive, etc., doesn't fit the evidence at all.
There is a video showing a man firing, you wearing a security jacket and crouching down real low, firing into the crowd, but you only see him maybe a second and a half or a second and a quarter of it, and then the camera is jerking around, you know. That's the problem with some of this, is that the people viewing the country music performance started filming evidently on some of their cameras, and then when the firing started, those cameras were, after they started running and panicking, they started you know, jerking around, and you couldn't get steady video on some of this. See?
Well, look, I think the real hero of this, I mean, okay, so the Las Vegas police have been doing as much as they can in the face of, effectively, they're right in the middle of a mafia city, they're right in the middle of an FBI zone, so it's very difficult for them to even speak, you know, to the public. It becomes very difficult.
Yeah,
this woman, Brianna Hendricks,
yeah.
I mean, she, in a way, gives everybody an absolute green light that this is not what it seemed, right? These two Hispanic people who were going around 45
yeah.
minutes inside the concert before the
right.
shooting started, saying that you're all going to bleep bleep die, right?
Right.
Now they were, to me this really strikes, I mean, this is more Charles Manson than it is ISIS, if you ask me. It's a kind of horrific thing to do, and it's a very, very similar to a kind of mafia threat, isn't it? You know, before they come and bump you off, the mafia come around and tell you they're going to bump you off.
But
this is exactly like that kind of situation. It may also be because they're Hispanic, they're linked to the drug dealings in drug cartels in Mexico or Colombia, somewhere like that, you know, which would absolutely fit with the modus operandi of the FBI and the CIA intelligence services. This is the way they operate. But that, to me, I think is one of the most amazing aspects of this, that Brianna Hendricks has told us that this was happening. And going around playing with people's hair, you know, invading their personal space, their own private space, behaving very, very strangely, and really disturbing people. So I think that that shows that the mafia are involved, and possibly drug runners, intelligence services, they can't resist going in there and sort of just putting their signature
yeah,
on the attack.
Paddock, Stephen, had a lot of characteristics with a couple of planes and plenty of money, and he could have been money laundering for interest. He could have been a front man for contact with ISIS. There could have been a lot of different, you know, connections
here. I think the whole point is to get everyone to focus on him. I think he was, it doesn't look to me as if he's really involved, you know, he, as a patsy, I think he probably, until somebody came into his room or whatever, threatened him, etc., probably didn't know what on earth was going on. It doesn't look like the guy, sort of guy who would be associated with all these guns suddenly arriving in his room. It may be that he was held prisoner in that room. I would very much
something
like
to know that
the
is
estimated
more, yeah.
time of death, because
right.
I would suspect that it may even have been before the shooting started, George, so they haven't given that out.
Yeah.
But remember, there was over an hour between the end of the machine gunning of the people and the arrival of the SWAT team in the room. So in an hour, a lot can happen.
Well, there was that security guard that went in 10 minutes after the firing had stopped and was on to that room and the location of the so-called, you know, sniper there. And he supposedly shot through the door and injured the security guard. Then the security guard backs off and brings in the authorities, and then they start taking guests out off of that floor and the subsequent lower floors and clearing out the hotel to secure it before they went in. So that's the sort of timeline, okay?
Yeah. Also, cui bono, we have to ask this every time, who benefits from this? Well, it looks to me as if the major effect of this is going to be calls for gun control.
Yeah,
now, who
exactly.
is it that controls the guns?
It's right.
the FBI. At the moment, the FBI are major, obviously, every one of them is armed pretty much, and they are the guys who would like, as a sort of internal security service, to have a monopoly on guns. And so a lot of the trails, it seems to me, lead right back to the FBI here. And I think we really need to, you need a very courageous police force. And I'm not sure that the Las Vegas police are going to be up.
One of the points...
on the FBI. I mean, I don't know what you think, George.
Yeah, what,
could
yeah.
a city police force, like Lombardo, actually take the FBI on to arrest them, interrogate them, this sort of thing?
Well, here's the deal in Vegas. Many of the victims that were there attending made note of it and testified that the police only had handguns, the Vegas police, to fight against these assault weapons and these machine guns. And so that's they usually carry stuff in their trunks in most municipal police, systems. But maybe the Vegas police just didn't have, you know, access on their, you know, carrying them.
George, to be honest with you, I don't know, even if they'd have had heavy machine guns in their pockets, like three or four of them, they would have been able to do very much, really.
Well, the problem...
Other than fire maybe bazookas into the holes in the...
Now, here's the problem.
In the hotel.
Here's the problem with this, Tony. There was firing coming from multiple locations, and this is where it even confused the police as to where the firing was coming from. And so that really was, it was crossfire and stuff like that going on, much like happened in Dealey Plaza. See what I mean? And now they focus in on this one.
I wouldn't necessarily concur. I mean, obviously you're physically closer, but I mean, I've looked now, I haven't seen any really strong evidence of fire coming from anywhere else.
Well, now
there's been a lot of pointing. I think it's the fourth floor. That is definitely not a shooter or muzzle flashes. That is a flashing light in that room. And I don't think we necessarily need to say that there were other locations. It may even be several shooters in that room.
Now there's a lady.
Other people in the hotel surely would have testified, hey, you know, three or four rooms down from me or opposite from me in the hotel, there was another guy shooting, you know, I could hear it. You know,
well, now there was an interview done. I don't have the lady's name because Michael Savage advised her to get off the air and don't do any more interviews, even though her name supposedly came up in a White House briefing, okay? But she states that she and her husband were facing west, and there was a lady next to them facing the same way. To their right shoulder was the hotel where the 32nd floor would have been, and the girl standing next to them got hit right in the stomach. And she and her husband both were of the opinion that it couldn't have come from the 32nd floor, is what they said.
That sounds like a hell of a ricochet, doesn't it?
Yeah, now ricochets do occur. And that does happen, see. But we have one video of a guy crouched down wearing a jacket, security jacket, actually firing into the crowd. And then there's some Australian interviews with some Australians that were there that were never published here. And they're saying that there was firing on a ground level is what they...
Let's take a step back from what happened for a minute. What is the meaning of this? First of all, it's in the heart of mafia country, right? This is a mafia.
Well, when you say mafia today, they're not that public anymore. They've gone corporate now, and they're not.
They really want to hide all the time. So I would like to see some public statements by the mafia, and then saying we've got nothing to do with this. We're quite happy to cooperate with the police, but they haven't said anything like that, have they? Also, we've got to also look at the potential connection with whatever ISIS is. Now, ISIS, to me, looks like a confected organization where there's a lot of mercenaries and people like that who are being employed, basically to set up a kind of proxy terror gang. So you would have had squads of ISIS people who will go under the name of ISIS, but what are they? You know, they're not necessarily ideologically motivated. They may just be paid large amounts of money. Most of the insurgency that's been going on in Syria over the last 4 or 5 years is just simply people who are just paid money to fight. There's not an ideological side to it. They get paid a lot of money, and they will swap around from ISIS to Al-Qaeda to the Free Syrian Army to Al-Nusra, depending on who pays them the most. You know, so I think we need to look at the potential squad behind this as just simply a bunch of mercenaries of some sort who have been put up to it.
Well,
connected with the Mossad and the Israeli intelligence.
There's no reason that
it wasn't a foreign intelligence service rather than, you know, the FBI. Obviously, the FBI, there's a very, very strong likelihood here that there's something been going on. The FBI are embarrassed and they need to desperately to cover it up because they've been up to no good in Las Vegas. And it may even be that they've been duped by a foreign intelligence service, maybe MI6 or Mossad.
But since JFK, the deep state has been building together and working together. So it's hard to differentiate against the FBI and the mafia, old mafia, and the CIA and all that. They're all working together on some level together. That's the problem.
Let's just step even further back, another step back.
Yeah.
This is an attack on Trump. Okay,
yes, it is.
Country music scene, which is very much pro-Trump generally.
They're gun toters. They're gun
Republican That's right.
Yes, it is.
Against gun control. So this is an attempt to strip the citizens of their guns, which is, you know, it's not what we do here in Britain, but certainly I can see the arguments in the United States that the citizenry...
Exactly, you're right on that. We're not going to give our guns up. We're not going to give them up.
So I think you've got those two aspects of it are really important. You know, the country music and the gun control aspects of it, I think, are what we need to focus on. And, you know, let's stop going over the minutiae of Paddock's life. I mean, we know he worked for Lockheed Martin. That should be enough to know that he may well have secrets that they might want to keep quiet, and also that he may well have had connections to the FBI, somebody like that. Is likely to be the sort of person the FBI would like to use because they know that he's worked for the military-industrial complex right in the heart of it. And so stop thinking about the Paddock. He's almost certainly Lee Harvey Oswald in this case, you know.
Exactly.
The guy he's supposed to look at. And let's just start finding out who else was in that hotel. Who was this security guard that was running off, or he was in a security guard's uniform? Why was the security guard running away, sprinting out of the hotel, trying to get away from the scene?
Right.
And there's all sorts of other bits of info, like the Hispanics. We need to trace them, George.
Right, right. That's for sure, because they interacted with several people there in that area. So, it's coming out now. They're not going to be able to keep this thing a lid on this not much longer. It's going to come out.
We need the FBI and we need the Mafia both to be completely open and honest with us.
Yeah.
Because the FBI aren't and the Mafia aren't. And I think what this effectively looks like is some kind of deep state operation, which is
Exactly. You're on top of it, Tony. It was a deep state operation to transform the gun control laws to a deeper level. See what I mean?
It's not a conspiracy theory. Look, the most likely... if his girlfriend and his brother and his next-door neighbor say he didn't do it, the chances are he didn't do it.
Right.
This is just the most likely outcome is that he didn't do it. You know, this guy is friendly. He gets a bit rude sometimes, you know, like millionaires sometimes do. But let's not hold that against him. You know, basically, he was generous. He was quite clearly a generous guy. He's quite a nice fella. And that fits the profile potentially of an FBI operative, that is an agent of influence. He may well have been paid lots of money by the FBI. That would be very interesting to find out if we can discover that. But those are the two places I think we need to be looking for the culprits here. One is through covert FBI operations. Number two is the Mafia. That's it, I think, George.
Yeah, right. Maybe midweek we can have another conversation. We'll know more by then. How's that sound?
So definitely, and I think what we need to do is get some of the names of the Mafia in Las Vegas. Let's get them on the TV.
They're operating through these corporate names, and these people are pretty clean that get those licenses now in corporate names and stuff. But the other guys, the old Mafia members are still, they still have interest, but there's no group like that. You know what I mean? In formal.
Brianna Hendricks deserves a medal.
Yes, that's right. Well, Tony, thank you, man. You got some good things to say about this. Oh, I did find out something. Charlotte and I did 30 minutes on Vegas and 30 minutes on Puerto Rico. There's a governmental agency in Puerto Rico called PP3. And PP3 manages, promotes, and puts together public-private partnership deals in Puerto Rico.
These are basically scams.
That's right. But this has been formalized by a governmental agency, a formal one that has a website called PP3 Puerto Rico. Yes.
And one of the investigations we did yesterday on our program in Bristol was into what they call Unit 8200 in Israel. Have you come across them, George?
No, I haven't. I haven't come across that.
Right, well, check them out, man. 8200 is producing the most educated and the most influential high-tech young tech gurus in the world. And, of course, they're all being put through the draft into the signals intelligence
cyber
warfare in Israel. And then once they come out of Unit 8200, they then get snapped up by these big tech companies. They also they're also given loads of money to do tech startups, and then they go out all over the world. They are the cutting edge, the leading edge of what they call cyber security. But then at the same time, that cyber security can be used against the people who trust it. In other words, it can be used for basically what they call the kill switch mentality. This kind of cyber warfare where if you get these people's software into key positions, say, for example, on the electricity grid, the telecommunications grid, they can just use it to close entire countries down.
Well, you make a good point there. What comes to my mind, a number of years ago, Cameron, reporting for CNN, I believe, came up with Amdocs as a Israeli company that has all the records on all of our phone calls, our cell phones, and all that in the country.
Well, that they were doing. They were providing cover for the Israeli mafia to operate all over America, doing drug dealing and whatever. And every time the law enforcement started to get onto the Israeli mafia, then Amdocs would let them know, and they'd all change their phone numbers, change their habits, etc. So this is why they're very interested in high-tech cyber.
Yeah, well, that's good.
I'll
check this out. I'll check this out. Well, thank you for the interview this evening, Tony. We'll talk maybe midweek, say, Wednesday maybe, or something.
Yeah, so also, just to remind your listeners of my radio show, that's at thisweek.org.uk, or you can find out all the latest about Las Vegas on our forum. It's the 911 UK forum. That is 911, the numbers, 911forum.org.uk.
Okay, well, thank you, Tony. And, boy, have a good evening and have a good weekend, okay?
Bless you, George, and everyone in Austin.
Okay, bless you. Good night.